From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Here in my hand, I have my smartphone. On the desk in front of me is a laptop, and in a parking lot out back is my truck. Three very different devices with different purposes and functions, but with one important common factor. Inside each is a lithium-ion battery that makes what they do possible. Throw out your mental image of a battery, those little AA cylinders inside your remote control or the big honking Ds in your flashlight. Lithium-ion batteries are the same shape as a deck of cards, but much thinner. They power most of the technology we use today, and now a team at Oak Ridge National Laboratory is working on a way to store more energy in those batteries, giving consumers more bang for their buck. WUOT's Christine Jessel brings us this story.
The Knoxville Solid Waste Transfer Station accepts household trash city and county residents can't put in the dump.
And if you'll give me your zip code.
37917.
Thank you. You have a good day.
Last month, the facility recycled 1,400 pounds of assorted car batteries, household batteries, and lithium-ion batteries. The lithium-ion batteries alone average about 35 to 50 pounds a week.
All sorts of type of batteries. You know.
While today's lithium-ion batteries power your cell phone and your laptop, the U.S. Department of Energy is investing millions of dollars to develop the battery for your next car. It's part of a national initiative to develop cleaner, cheaper, longer-lasting energy sources, and Oak Ridge National Laboratory has quite a few players in this game.
I feel like this is a very interesting area and could have a very important or substantial impact.
That's researcher Jianlin Li, who's found a new solution to an old lithium-ion battery problem. Li's developed a way to replace a volatile organic compound called NMP with water in the manufacturing process. NMP is a particularly hazardous solvent.
We have very strict requirement. We cannot be exposed to these kind of materials.
Replacing NMP with water has already been done on the anode side of the battery. Li is working on the opposite, or cathode side, which has a more complicated chemical makeup.
If you can do it on the cathode side, you have a bigger impact, right?
Li says NMP is toxic, flammable, and also creates an extremely dangerous vapor in the last few stages of manufacturing that has to be totally recovered. Water, on the other hand, is safer in the mix and would release steam at the point of vaporization, which in turn lowers production costs ordinarily passed on to the consumer. And when you're talking about car batteries, Li says those costs add up.
I'm here to save money for you.
Money is what's driving R&D behind batteries right now. Stanley Whittingham is the inventor of the lithium-ion battery.
Yeah, everything cycles around. So batteries went out of vogue, I guess, in the 80s and came back in the 90s. And lithium-ion batteries really dominate everything in the portable electronics industry. But they still have relatively low storage capabilities.
Whittingham says the batteries on the market now only get about 15% of the power they should get based on weight. The current major research trend is boosting that energy output while keeping the battery safe.
I think we're always going to be pushing for a better battery, a better product, a lighter one, a lower cost one.
Whittingham says that also means more competition in the market as researchers work to build credibility and get grants.
I think it's very good to have some competition. You don't want too much. Today, my concern would be that every national lab is doing some battery work and they're not really working all that well together. It's more competition.
And as that competition tightens, Whittingham recommends caution, especially for projects like Li's in Oak Ridge that rely on government funding.
We mustn't promise too much to the politicians or they'll come back in 5 years and say, you didn't deliver, we're going to wipe you out.
Whittingham says getting to an affordable electric vehicle for consumers will take more than just new batteries. It will take advances in the electrical power system, motor, and body, too. And it will take years for Jianlin Li's improved battery to make it to the market. But as long as consumers want portable power, there will be room for invention. That gives new meaning to the age-old question, what will they think of next? For The Method, I'm Christine Jessel, WUOT News.
In 2006, a beekeeper in Florida started noticing something strange about his hives. The bees were disappearing. Before long, the same pattern was noted all along the eastern seaboard and in parts of Europe. There was no readily available explanation for the phenomenon, which was soon labeled colony collapse disorder. The syndrome is concerning not just to beekeepers, but to agricultural researchers and farmers, because many of the fruits and vegetables we eat depend on bees to pollinate their parent plants. John Skinner is one of those agricultural researchers. He's working with colleagues around the nation to unlock the causes of colony collapse disorder before the problem becomes too great to solve.
Well, what you're talking about, Brandon, is this colony collapse disorder. In Tennessee, it's my opinion that we did not have very much of the classic CCD symptoms here. We had other challenges that were also killing our bees, so that we really did need to do more study on what was going on in Tennessee. So we looked at the effects of things like pesticides, things like a new disease. We also had concerns about varroa mites. And over the time of the study, most of my colleagues would agree that varroa is still probably the number one problem causing bee decline. Notice I'm not calling it CCD anymore. It's a bigger picture.
That contrasts with something that the European Commission recently did, where they took a step forward to ban, at least temporarily, a certain kind of pesticide to see if that would have any kind of effect in Europe on declining bee populations. So they're taking a step in a sort of reactionary direction, where you're talking about doing more research here in the United States to better understand the problem. Could you sort of compare and contrast those two avenues of addressing the problem?
Well, there are both ways to look at it, and it's a complicated issue. And I would say we need more research because the data that's out there isn't conclusive. There are some studies that indicate that pesticides may be a major problem. There are others that just don't have the real clean data that we can make any kind of blanket statement. So it's kind of like a moving target.
What are some of the concerns that you're hearing from Tennessee's beekeepers and farmers? What are they noticing on the ground?
It varies all over the board, from some people that have lost few colonies to some people that have lost 70-80% of their colonies of bees. And in many of these cases, we don't know exactly why that is. But it's what we did realize is that we need to do much more research on these causes and these problems that are affecting our bees so that we can better define it.
Dr. John Skinner is researching the declining bee population in Tennessee and across the nation. He works with the University of Tennessee Extension Agriculture Program. Dr. Skinner, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Brandon. It's been a pleasure.
That's The Method from WUOT News. You can listen to this or other installments of the program at our website, wuot.org. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.